Teach me your ways, O Lord, and I will walk in your truth.
There is this hesitance that says, oh, I'm afraid that something will challenge my faith, and so I try to protect my faith. The difficulty is, how do you protect something that's supposed to save you?
Interface. Not the same questions, not the same answers.
Hello, I'm Brad Johnson, and welcome to Interface, an examination of Christian perspectives on thought, faith, and culture with Adam Ayers, the pastor of Disciples Church in Costa Mesa, California, and the founder of the Stoa Foundation. With us in studio today, we have once again Tom Dunn and Chris Holowaty, and we have gathered here today to answer a question which has been brought up to us a multitude of times, but we haven't addressed on the air probably since this show started. And that question is, what is the Stoa Foundation? And what is a Stoa anyway? So, with that, we're going to turn it over to the founder of the Stoa Foundation, Adam Ayers.
Well, a number of listeners have asked that, you know, what in the world is a Stoa Foundation? And I suppose that is a kind of a funny name for an organization, but you'd be surprised how hard it is to find a name for a foundation these days that has not been used. But a lot of the listeners have inquired, what is Stoa? What are we all about? Why in the world are we doing what we do? And really, and I think this is very genuine, some very sincere questions about why would we be engaging the kinds of dialogue that we engage on Interface? Some people with some deep concerns. Why would we want to, in a sense, disrupt? And some very genuine concern, I think, about just wondering why we would engage the kinds of topics that we engage on Interface. Why is our tagline not the same questions, not the same answers? Why do we talk about things that are in many ways typically taboo or inflammatory for the Christian community? And why do we take the stances that we take? And are we dirty liberals or are we not? And so I guess I'll start at the top on that with what is a Stoa Foundation. The name derives from the Greek word stoa. It's just stoa. The term stoa means porch. There are a number of ways of having meaning to that that really were involved in naming the Stoa Foundation. The first is, if you've ever heard of, a lot of people have heard of Stoics. Stoics are named from Stoa. The Stoa was generally the porch, the front porch of a temple in ancient Greece. And the porch was the place, because it was a large area, it's not quite the porch that we think of now, also porticos. If you think the early church gathered in the portico of Solomon, the porch of Solomon in the Jewish temple. So it was the Stoa of Solomon. But on the porch in ancient Greece, philosophers, people who had sincere questions, would sit and dialogue. That was one of the functions of working through issues. Back then they didn't have talk radio. They had no Oprah. And there was no forum where people could go and listen to daily events, public events, philosophical questions, matters of politics, where people could go and hear multiple opinions on these issues that had been worked through in a disciplined or systematic manner. And the Stoics formed really basically an entire school there on the Stoa. And originally, I mean, a Stoic is not just simply someone who goes through life reservedly. A Stoic is someone who engages a certain philosophical stance on life. And it's not that we're Stoics here. It's that we sit on the porch and talk about significant issues. So the philosophy here of the Stoa Foundation is to be a place that is somewhere between that which is sacred and that which is secular. So to speak, a gateway between the temple area, which is a sacred place for worship, and the marketplace, which is not a place for the discussion of religious or sacred issues. It's not a place to take the sacred. So where do you go that's in between, that one can take that which is from the secular and bring it into dialogue with that which is from the sacred? And that's really what the Stoa is all about. That this is a place to provide an interface, truly, an interacting place between that which is secular and that which is sacred. And that's really what the Stoa Foundation is about generally. Whether it be in colleges and universities, whether it be on the streets, whether it be with the media, however this works, to be a place where the thoughts and concerns of the secular community are brought, and its processes of moving toward what it sees to be truth, are brought into sincere and non-combative dialogue. That there is a place designated for this kind of dialogue, that it's not simply about fighting out in the marketplace or fighting in the temple. It's a place where we've agreed to come and speak as reasonable seekers of truth. We from the perspective of the sacred, they from the perspective of the secular. And that this can be a place where these issues are entertained with balance and compassion and reason to approach these issues philosophically. That does provide an entryway, a gateway, a porch by which people can enter into the temple, into sacredness, and into worship. Because in a sense, this provides steps between the secular, the marketplace, and the temple. That secular persons, by entering these dialogues and having these secular views, can find themselves engaged in a reasonable manner and come to see the Christian understanding of truth and see their philosophies engaged in a reasonable way from a sacred perspective, and to find that which is true about them and that which is perhaps less compelling than the sacred position. So that's Stoa Foundation generally, and that's our agenda, is to try to be a bridge between truly academia and the church, between theology proper and philosophy and its secular development, since philosophy was really not developed by the sacred community, but appropriated by the sacred community throughout history. And so to engage between these two disciplines, that's a Stoa. Plus, I thought it would be really funny to name an organization the Porch Foundation. You know, kind of a play on words, foundation being that which undergirds the porch. And so the Stoa Foundation being that which undergirds these kinds of dialogues and supports dialogues between the sacred and the secular.
Adam, I know that people have posed the question either on the internet or in letters or things of that nature. Are you guys being inflammatory just to be inflammatory? And I must confess, even myself, as someone who's on this program, am I doing that? That's an issue that I continually wrestle with. There are times that I will pose questions on this program that really come from the id in a lot of ways, that come from my fears, that come from my sort of the pit of my desires as far as like what I think life should be with God, what I think God should be to me, what I think God should be for me or me for God, or et cetera, et cetera. But people have asked, are you guys just trying to be clever and different and edgy and by the things you're talking about?
I hear what you're saying, Tom, and I think those are the genuine concerns of some of the people who have written us or spoken to us over the phone or contacted us over the internet. More than that, no, we're not just trying to be inflammatory, and I don't even think that you're trying to be inflammatory all of the time simply to be inflammatory. And edginess for edginess's sake is, I believe, pointless and meaningless and a waste of a Christian life. However, what I do find is that you are not alone, that there are many in the Christian community who have significant fears, which they are not allowed to voice in the sacred community, because immediately, simply by voicing the question, there is a reactive response, and that person is labeled as whatever it might be, a liberal, a second-rate Christian, marginalized in some way, simply because they have significant doubts. And often, at least I've found, faith is not the absence of doubt. Faith is the courage to believe in the presence of doubt. It is a decision one makes in the face of one's fears, in the face of one's doubts, in the face of one's hesitations, to say, Lord, I believe, help my unbelief, and that the Lord honors that. But many instead are blown about by their fears and forced into defensive positions where they can never get their fears resolved because they cannot voice their doubts. And if we think liberals are hard on us as Christians, the secular world pulls no punches. And many of these folks, because they are not allowed to negotiate these issues or these thoughts or these doubts in a sacred context, then end up blindsided by a secular critic, and then very often have their faith seriously destabilized because these issues have not been negotiated in a Christian context. They've been negotiated by an aggressive, vicious secularist who has an axe to grind with religion and desires simply to destroy or destabilize faith.
So the Christian who's struggling with these things is setting themselves up to get slammed by the secularist or whatever.
Yes. Okay, just by way of example, the issue of sexuality, correct? The Christian church typically places a lot of emphasis on sexual behavior. Sexual behavior is found to be the height of sin, you know, the greatest expression of depravity, whatever it might be, particularly with teens. Young people growing up, much of the focus of Christian ministry to young people is about their sexual behavior, and which is probably in some ways advisable because that's all teens think about, you know. However, the church tends to simultaneously oppose sexual education. So we put tremendous emphasis on the negation of sexuality, as though somehow we will hold back the tide, and yet do nothing to help these teens negotiate through their sexuality, but simply try to suppress. So as a result, the teen finds avenues outside the church to both explore and to gain wisdom and insight on their sexuality. Whereas if we instituted sexual education programs in the church, perhaps we could walk them through it. In the same way with philosophical issues, say the issues of evolution, issues of divorce, of economics, these issues which are real that Christians struggle with, the Christian church places a tremendous emphasis, at least the biblical texts do, on the use of money, on the use of power, on the use, social aspects, and yet we typically will educate and engage in theological dialogue, but not the dialogues where we live. I very rarely have been tempted in my doctrine, but I have been tempted in my life. But the church does not typically, we as evangelicals, do not typically allow a reasonable place to dialogue sincerely about this without condemnation. So someone, for example, is not allowed to say in a church, you know, I really believe in evolution. Is there any way to be a Christian and believe this? No, you may not believe that, and don't raise that question here. And if you continue to raise that question here, you're out. And no one says, well, is there a Christian way to negotiate this? We happen to recognize that you're a paleontologist working for the University of California, and this is a significant issue for you. Or, for example, I know of one pastor who drank an alcoholic beverage. Bum, 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 bum. And just as they criticized Jesus for drinking alcoholic beverages with sinners, persons in this pastor's church criticized that pastor for drinking an alcoholic beverage in the presence of sinners and asked, what sort of an example might that be? This pastor responded, well, perhaps this would be an example to teach people how to drink responsibly. The response came back, there is no such thing. So these are the kinds of things that are not allowed to be negotiated in the Christian church and create burdens too grievous to be borne, which we fail to lift one finger to assist. And yet these are the issues with which people live. People live in their doubts. People live trying to go to bed at night and struggling with very significant issues, which if they raise in a sacred context, will do them damage about the same as happening to mention out loud at a cocktail party, I've struggled with ringworm lately. You know, you just get ostracized. And the same thing happens if a Christian says, you know, I've really been struggling with wondering whether premarital sex is wrong or not. Or, I've really been struggling because I don't want to pray for the children in Africa. How could you? Instead of saying, well, bro, let's talk about that. Why?
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, that whenever someone says, well, let's talk about it, immediately it seems like the end that's coming is so that I can convince you of why you should see it my way. Or I can convince you of this position that you should have if you're a real Christian, et cetera, et cetera. Which brings up kind of another interesting thing that happens on this show, that when we have unbelievers come on here and say what they believe, whether it's people of other faiths or people who don't have a faith in their own mind or whatever. And I'm sure there are people that wonder, why the heck would you have a Buddhist cleric come on a Christian radio show that's supposed to be talking about Christian perspectives on thought, faith, and culture? And why the heck is that happening? Shouldn't you be witnessing to them?
I hear what you're saying, Tom. And yes, that is one of the issues. And for those who have wondered, the reason to have a Buddhist cleric on Christian radio is that Christians don't understand Buddhists. And as a result, we can't dialogue with them. And where else do you get a Christian and a Buddhist cleric to be able to engage in dialogue about their faiths without there being an invested I win, you lose situation? And persons did, we received some comments about that show. Why didn't you argue with the Buddhist cleric? It was a lady. And I found it so ironic that if someone had known about Buddhism, and particularly about Aikido and the Soto sect of Buddhism, that they would know that their primary ethical consideration is harmony and peaceableness, which means that if you try to argue with them, they will simply be silent and walk away. It's a little bit like asking a rabbi onto a show and handing him a ham sandwich. You can't do that. Those are the kinds of false presentations of the gospel that we make as Christians. We assume that our world is Christian and that it's just about readjusting it back to Christianity when our world is not Christian. And these people do not think the way we think, and they need to be engaged in sincere dialogue. And we cannot assume that non-Christians will think or act like Christians. And it's a pity that often we as Christians, without realizing it, think and act like secularists. And that's part of the aim of this show, is to highlight those ways in which, by examining secular philosophy, we can come to realize those ways in which we as a church have truly been secularized without our knowledge, and come to a very core understanding of what it means to be a Christian. And like folks will often say to me, or criticize us for being liberals. And in reality, if you listen to the show, you'll realize we're not liberals. We happen to be so conservative that we simply say we will follow in Christian tradition and we will listen to the scriptures in their scope, not simply in that which is accommodating to Western Americanism.
There's a lot of good things being said here, and I think an additional factor of why I devote time to this show and really believe in it is because of the things that we've mentioned, but also an interesting outgrowth of the show being on the air is that we have found a lot of people who respond to our show are people who are involved in ministry, and that really encourages me a lot. I guess I should go back to describing a little bit about why I like the show so much and why I work on it. Is one of the things is because my background was in a very conservative church, and it was typified by a lot of what we've described here today, as far as if you have a question that really brings up serious doubt or really shakes up what is being presented in your church or in your school. I mean, I went to a religious school. Oftentimes I was told, you need to just leave that to God, be submissive, and move on. Just trust. And that was never acceptable to me, because I felt like if Jesus really did say the truth will set you free, I wanted to know the truth, and I wanted to know the true Christ. And part of it motivated out of a fear of what if I'm wrong, and part of it motivated out of you want to get to know the people you love. And I've found that one of the benefits of being in this dialogue format for this show is you really get to pursue a topic and come to a deeper understanding of who Christ is. And in turn, you gain a better understanding of how to walk with Him, I think. In response, and as responding to Tom's question earlier as to whether we're inflammatory, I find most of what I hear on Christian radio to be highly inflammatory. Inflammatory to me, in that it really tips me off. So it is tempting at times on this show to use this as my platform. But I have found that I feel like we have a necessary position in which to calmly and with compassion talk about what we see, what we hear, where we live. And I have found that this is a place for me to bring my experiences to the table and go, this is what I've seen, this is what I've heard, this is where I've lived, this is what I have found. And to compare notes and thereby be sometimes encouraged, sometimes challenged, and pretty much always drawn in to find out who God is and to pursue that more deeply.
Chris, that really is the deeper aim of the show and of the foundation, in a way that has integrity. Because I don't know about you, but I don't live in this kind of world. I don't find that that's my Christianity. I find that my Christianity is lived out with brothers and sisters in our dialogues, trying to walk together as the body of Christ. And that in those dialogues, faith is a significant issue. And that in many of our hearts, there is this hesitance that says, oh, I'm afraid that something will challenge my faith. And so I try to protect my faith. The difficulty is, how do you protect something that's supposed to save you? And if Christ is not true and strong enough to save me, if somehow I have to save Christ from the critique or opinions of a secular society, how do I expect him to save me when I'm busy saving him? And if Christ is true, no question can destroy him. The problem comes when many times we link falsely a false assumption we have with Christ and say that if this secondary or tertiary doctrine is false or falsified, then Christ is not true. And I think part of the purpose of this program and of these dialogues is to say, what is it that is truly fractable? You know, what is it that can be destroyed? And what is it that cannot? When it comes down to the heart of it, Christ cannot be destroyed. He is true, and there is no reason to fear. There is no reason to fear any question, because Christ is true. Christ has risen. He's risen indeed. And I had breakfast with him this morning, and he lives in my heart, and he tucks my soul into bed. There is no question that can destroy that. There's questions and arguments and stratagems of the world that can destroy our auxiliary beliefs, because our auxiliary beliefs are founded on our reason, our traditions, our typical ways of viewing our worlds. So those, when they're threatened, we feel that somehow they're threatening Christ. But Christ is true, God is true, and all men may be liars. And part of the purpose of this show is to come back again to find that which is really able to be discarded without threat, and to rediscover the beauty of that which will stand when the entire universe is shaken and taken away, so that only those things which cannot be shaken remain. And the things which cannot be shaken are Christ, his love for the church, his saving influence in our lives. We don't carry Christ around on our shoulders. We don't have to prop him up. We don't have to nail him down. He's not an idol that needs to be protected or carried around by us and our reason and our logic. We can rest in him and let the questions fly, and then rejoice when he simply comes out as Christ. He's the risen one, and even if you kill him, you cannot keep him down. And to experience that again, even in our thoughts and our minds, because he came to bring us freedom, not to bind us up. He came to bring us peace and joy, not to make us fearful and reactionary. He came to bring us forgiveness, not judgment. He came to fulfill the law, not to uphold it. All these things. He came to bring us life, not simply aggression and zeal. And that's what we're looking for.
Yeah, I think anybody who listens to this show for any period of time will know that we do love the church, and we do love Christ. And I think a lot of our questions are not driven by a desire to just stir up a hornet's nest. It is because we're passionate about this church. We are passionate about the body that we are part of, that belongs to us and that we belong to, that as I see members of my body out there just being burdened by, how you describe it, auxiliary beliefs, or by fears, or by things that we have added on as a church, legalistic structures, whatever, there's part of me that's very defensive about that and just wants to go, remember your first love. Get back to what's basic. Let's get back to what is foundational, truly foundational, the love of God and the love of each other. You know, the old story about the Apostle John, that in his later years, he would constantly preach the same message. He would get up and he would say, children, love one another. Children, love one another, over and over again. And his followers would become frustrated with him. It's like, do you have anything else to say to us? And his response was, when you learn that, then we can talk about other things. I think that's pretty much who we are and what we want to talk about here.
And all that in response to, what is the Stoa Foundation and why do we do this show? We've been discussing that with Adam Ayers, Chris Holowaty, and Tom Dunn. We'd like to thank Chris Holowaty for engineering the show. Thanks to Laughing Yak Studios for helping to make Interface possible, and thanks to you for listening.